Get energized and excited to tell the world, hey, you can call me Catholic. Live from the Christ Cathedral campus in Garden Grove, California, EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network and Orange County Catholic Radio present Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normanton.
Whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely. If there is any excellence and if there is anything worthy of praise, come on, there's always something to praise God about. We need to dwell longer in that camp. Camp God. Those are the good words of St. Paul's from his letter to the Philippians. Live in the light, my friends. That's what we try to do every Saturday on Call Me Catholic, to talk honestly about the good life that God intends for each of us to live. I am Peggy Normanton, and you have arrived at Call Me Catholic, a light and hopefully lively hour of conversation intended to affirm, explore, and celebrate our Catholic identity in these modern times. So you can wake up and say to the world each and every day, oh yeah, you can call me Catholic. Team Call Me Catholic is ready at the go today. We've got Marvelous Matt, our call screener and social media coordinator, keeping us accessible to everybody out there. And then, of course, all our listeners look forward to hearing Jimmy G is in the house.
Hello there.
You know he is my engineer and chief fact checker.
And Matt, by the way, is marvelous.
He's marvelous.
I'm waving at him.
We never doubted that. Hey, and you know, I want to just call to everyone's attention that we've been on the air for a little over 2.5 years now, a little less than two and a half years.
Right, right.
And you have never been sick. You've never once called in sick to leave me stranded out here.
I guess not.
Yeah.
Come to think of it.
Neither have I.
All that sick time that I've...
Nor have I.
...have gained.
But, you know, it has been a terrible season for the flu this year.
Yes.
Since October, when the flu first started kind of breaking into households, breaking down households, 17,000 people have been hospitalized because of the flu. And we are still in, you know, its peak. It is not over yet.
And that's just North America?
That's just here in the United States.
Okay.
And it's really hitting people that are over 50 years old and then children that are under 4. So it's a pandemic, really. Mm. And our prayers are with all of you. I'm guessing everybody knows somebody, a friend or a family member, maybe your own self, who has been touched by the nasty bug this winter. And we pray for your return to health and your trust in God's providence through all these trials. So stay well, my friends.
Amen.
Stay well. Now, this is one I would like to point out. This is our second inaugural show, if that's possible, on Facebook Live. So if you would like to watch us, in addition to hearing us, you can go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/callmecatholic. You'll see all the hijinks going on behind the scenes.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, check us out. You can see our studio, you can see our guests, and you can see the back of Jimmy G's head.
That's why I'm wearing a hat today. I learned my lesson last week.
I know. Well, I know. That's kind of scary because it's just shooting right there. It's not your best feature, the back of your head.
The back of my head is not my best side.
So turn around and wave to everybody watching us on Facebook Live.
Hey, everybody. Can you see
Hello.
Me?
We're going to even use some props today because I thought, hey, if we're going to be a little visual.
I wonder if Marvelous Matt can add emojis.
No. No emojis. We are living emojis right here. Okay. So we like to, here on Call Me Catholic, always have a theme for the show, kind of commemorate and celebrate something going on in the liturgical calendar or in the national calendar that we're all celebrating as a Catholic family. And you know what's coming up, Ash Wednesday.
Mm.
And how do we know that Lent is almost here? Here comes my first prop.
Oh, okay.
Because of these nasty little things.
Oh.
Those darling, adorable little vixens in their brown and green uniforms are out there peddling thin mints.
You have it upside down.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, don't they reverse that in this camera? Isn't everything upside down in the camera lens? Yeah, so they always get out there and start selling these delicious little cookies right before Lent when we're all trying to adopt really good and holy sacrificial ways in our diet.
Right.
And so, you know, I bought 5 boxes. I can't resist the little cute little girls next door. And I know I've got to eat them all before Wednesday because, you know, we give up sweets or we give up chocolate or we give up cookies. And you can't have them.
Just don't touch them on Fridays, right?
Well, like that. No, you can't eat meat on Fridays.
That's right. That's right.
You know, if you can eat cookies if you didn't give them up, but I always do. So, okay. So in addition to being Ash Wednesday this February 14th, it's also Valentine's Day. And as it happens, it's also the conclusion of National Marriage Week. National Marriage Week was launched, I think Thursday, and it goes through to Wednesday.
Ah.
So we're celebrating. It's the great trifecta of romance and love. And look, here's another prop. If you look at the word Valentine, okay, if you're watching us on Facebook, you can see it. What's right in the middle of the word Valentine
nice.
Is Lent. So, you know, really, Lent is a completely compatible holiday with Ash Wednesday and Valentine's Day. Bringing that together is a very beautiful match, because it's because of our love for Jesus that we get our ashes on Ash Wednesday, and then we walk along during his public ministry and right up to the foot of the cross.
I can't recall Ash Wednesday ever falling on Valentine's before.
I remember it once before it
oh,
did.
Really?
Yeah, I remember that. It's sort of traumatic for women, but I think men look at it as a really great excuse to sort of let it pass.
There you go. There you go.
Okay. So we are going to talk about it all today on Call Me Catholic, Love and Sacrifice. How do you find true love in the world these days? Well, our guests today embarked on an experiment to address that age-old question. And of course, dating used to be the gateway to finding your true love in the modern world. You'd go out on a date. Did you date Mindy, like, properly before you married?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Once more with feeling.
Well, absolutely.
Okay. But traditional dating, boy asks girl out to a dinner, to a movie, maybe to a baseball game. It's a practice that's kind of fading from our culture.
Hmm.
And it is a philosophy that a professor at Boston College, fine Jesuit university, it's a philosophy she started teaching her freshman and sophomore students. And she gave them, as part of that teaching, the assignment of asking someone out on a date and giving them instructions on how to do that, because she found they really didn't know how to do that. And this professor, who we're going to talk about, she feels that practice of dating is very valuable in forming good relationships and that it was becoming obsolete. Well, as this professor's class became more and more popular and kind of a national news story, it gave film writer and producer Megan Harrington an idea for a documentary on dating. And that documentary, is coming out next month. It's called The Dating Project, and it follows five single people around as they try to navigate the modern rules of engagement to find meaningful, authentic relationships, true love in modern times. And one of the participants in that excellent documentary is Chris Meehan. And both Chris and Megan are here in the studio with us today to talk about The Dating Project in just a minute. And they're both single, I should point out. So that may give you another incentive to go to our Facebook Live page. Okay, and if you want to join that conversation, by the way, I'm going to throw out our number in advance. The number is 714-282-6034. That's 714-282-6034. We will invite your comments and your questions for our guest today. Okay, and then we are going to possibly close our show with a Chatting with Catholics segment, where I take my microphone to an audience of Catholics of all ages, and I ask them what they are giving up for Lent, what they were giving up for Lent. Past tense, present tense, I'm mixing that up there. But first up, it's the Call Me Catholic Countdown, which this week will be my top five favorite saints who were married to each other. Two saints, one marriage. What are the chances? I mean, you may know people who call themselves a martyr because of their marriage. We all know those people. But that is not what I'm talking about. Now, we are all, of course, called to help each other towards sainthood, and no more so than in marriage. And this week it seems particularly appropriate, since we're celebrating Valentine's Day and Ash Wednesday on the same day this week. And not only that, but we're in the middle of National Marriage Week, and tomorrow is World Marriage Day. So here we go. We are going to take a look at some married couples who modeled love so perfectly that they became saints. Here we go.
The Call Me Catholic Countdown.
Okay, I'm going to start with number five. Number five is Saints Aquila and Priscilla. Now, they were a very prominent noble Jewish couple who lived in Rome right during the early Christian period, you know, the decades following Jesus' death and resurrection. And they became converts to Christianity after hearing Paul teach, and then they became great friends with St. Paul and traveled with him. And their home became one of the early house churches during the formation of Christianity, before we had churches. It was homes. And they housed a lot of Christians during that madman Nero's burning of Rome and persecuting of Christians, blaming it all on Christians. There is a great movie, by the way, coming out called Paul the Apostle, I believe, and that's coming out during Holy Week. Excellent movie, and it features Priscilla and Aquila and tells how they saved so many Christians during, and their love was just beautiful, because it showed, you know, they talked it out. They had to talk it out a lot. They had different ideas on how to save themselves, save the Christians, preserve their faith. So, okay, that's number four. Number five. Number four will be Saints Zachary and Elizabeth. Now, these are the parents of John the Baptist. Elizabeth was barren into old age. Zachary was Zachariah was a priest in the Levite tradition, and he was in the temple praying one day, and Angel Gabriel appeared to him and said, "Your wife is going to have a child." And he said, I don't think so.
Right.
She's getting on in years, and we've tried this, and it's not working. And so for doubting the angel, he was struck dumb.
That's
and,
right.
of course, he wasn't able to speak until his son was born, and he named him appropriately John, as he was given instructions to.
He had to cease his radio show at that point.
So. Silence doesn't work on the radio. Okay, number three will be Saints Isidore the Farmer and his wife Maria de la Cabeza. They were a beautiful Spanish couple, and they were living in the 11th century Spain. They were rural farmers, and they were just known for their generosity, always kept a pot of stew on the stove for people that came by that were hungry, and they were just beautiful models of charity, and they did that together. They helped each other. Okay, number two will be Saints Louis and Zélie Martin. You know, they are the parents of little Thérèse of Lisieux. They had nine children. Four of them died prematurely, and five of them went on to become religious consecrated
right.
women.
Yeah.
So we know about their story and about their beautiful marriage through St. Therese's autobiography, The Story of a Soul. And Zélie, it's cute, Zélie said that she saw her husband-to-be passing a bridge. He was a stranger at that time, and she saw his face, and it was love at first sight. She said, I know this is the man that God
wow.
intends me to marry.
And amazing.
Okay. And number one, well, it's a no-brainer. I have to say St. Joseph and his spouse, Mary. Beautiful, beautiful marriage, incomparable model for love and sacrifice. And, you know, Joseph was such a beautiful husband. Couldn't have been anybody else.
Okay. Numero uno.
Numero uno. So there you have it. My top five favorite married couple saints. We can all strive for that. And this is the week to pray about it, as it's Valentine's Day, Ash Wednesday, and National Marriage Week all wrapped up into one. Now, don't forget, you can watch us or just check us out on Facebook. There's a live stream there going on right now. And if you don't get to it now, you can get to it later. Or just check out our page. We've got pictures and podcasts and links and all kinds of things. Good information there. And give us a like if you care to. Okay, you will see our guest coming up next. Megan Harrington, producer of the Dating Project movie opening next month, is with one of the film stars, Chris Meehan, and they are here to talk about finding love in the modern world. It is brutal out there, but love is just around the corner. We'll be just right back with our Valentine's Day special. This is Call Me Catholic, and you're listening to the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Exploring the perils and blessings of embracing a Catholic identity. This is Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normanton.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to this St. Valentine's Day, Ash Wednesday, and World Marriage Day edition of Call Me Catholic. I am your happy host, Peggy Normanton. We're always looking for occasions to celebrate here on Call Me Catholic. And today we've got the trifecta of love themes with tomorrow, as I keep mentioning, is World Marriage Day. We've got Valentine's Day and Ash Wednesday on the same day. So what's love got to do with it? Just about everything. We are going to, in this following conversation, we're going to zero in a little bit on romantic love for this conversation for Valentine's Day, okay? And for everybody who's out there looking for the perfect Valentine card to send their special somebody, for Wednesday, just a reminder, guys, there's someone in that same aisle that's probably wishing they had somebody to send a Valentine to. Now, for the first time in our history, I think half of our American population is single. A lot of it is by choice, but we know a lot of single people who would love to find a soulmate, a spouse, even just a pleasant date to pass the evening with. So what has happened to the practice of dating? That is a question about which our guest today just made a film. Megan Harrington is a Hollywood writer and producer whose film, The Dating Project, opens next month in a theater near you. It's going to be a good date movie. It's a documentary that follows five single people with different demographic profiles who are all searching for a meaningful romantic relationship. And one of those people is Chris Meehan, who's with us here, and they're both with us here to talk about The Dating Project movie, how it came to be, and what they learned in the process of making it. So, Megan Harrington, Chris Meehan, welcome to Call Me Catholic.
Thank you.
Thank you, Peggy.
Okay,
great to be here.
Before we go into the background, Chris, is this a good movie to take a date to?
It is a great movie to take a date to. Yeah, hubba hubba. It is the place, seriously, this is a good place to go. And, you know, I also, it's funny, you were talking about Ash Wednesday and Valentine's Day, and I like that because I fast then. So a cheap date. You don't go out to dinner. It's holy. You know, what is she going to say?
Can we
you know
have what I mean? More water all going, the way around?
Yeah. You know what I mean? So it works for me, and it's good for the budget. But
okay. Now I'm going to hand the microphone to you, Megan, because I want you to tell our listeners a little bit about The Dating Project, the movie, how it came to be, and what it is.
Sure. Well, Catherine Fowler Sample and I, she is now married. She's a success story. She's the other
so the
writer, producer.
For her.
Yes. A behind-the-scenes success story. So we were working on a documentary for Empire Pictures, and they were working with a client, and the client was looking for a series of documentaries. And Catherine had done a pitch for a reality show called The Date in Every State.
A date in every state.
A date in every state. We said, well, we don't want to do a reality show, but we did say dating. That's a good topic. We had just been to a dinner. There were 14 women, and two were married, and the rest were single. And a lot of us couldn't remember maybe when our last really date was.
Had a really good, formal, you know,
and these are functioning people.
Yeah.
And so we said, okay, this is a topic we want to explore. Because when women get together, we talk about men. We talk about dating, and men do too. They just use less words, I think.
You have to pull it out of them.
Lots of hand signals.
So we started to put together a pitch of looking at different archetypes. You know, a career woman, very driven, someone just out of college entering the workforce, two kids in college, and then our 40-something who has options and expectations and probably suffering from too much choice.
And Peter Pan complex, yes.
He's not a 40-something. Are you a 40-something?
I've had a lot of work done. It is Los Angeles. It's I just got to, you know, with the ladies out there, there's a lot of competition.
All the single ladies.
Yeah.
Okay, so you identified these single people in different mm-hmm. regions from different age groups, different cultural backgrounds, mm-hmm. and you started following them around in their social life.
That's right. So what we did is, in some cases, we did a casting call or we'd send it out to try to find this archetype. You know, we knew the different types of people we were looking for. So that was a process in and of itself. Then we would go spend time with them. And Chris can probably tell you more on that.
Chris was the Los Angeles guy.
San Francisco, Los Angeles.
Okay,
yeah,
West Coast.
Yeah.
And it really was wonderful because they opened their lives up to us. And when you come to film, it's not just, you know, can we have a couple hours? It's... can we have the whole day into the evening?
Oh, yeah.
It's a long process, and the people that were selected truly did really open their hearts, their minds, and wanted to explore the topic as well. It was on their heart. So we were fortunate to get just wonderful people to be part of it.
And let's remind our listeners that the inspiration for this, and her message is woven in and out of the documentary, came from Professor Cronin at Boston College, which is a Jesuit university, who had a class where she literally made an assignment out of asking, you had to ask someone out on a date. And she had rules and she had protocol for it, and you had to do it if you were going to pass the class, right?
Well, yeah, she had started making it mandatory about 10 years ago, I think she started to realize, hey, what's going on? What's going on campus? She was hearing a lot about hookup culture, and she was talking to seniors as they were getting ready to leave. And she said, so what about your relationships? And they're all like, we didn't go on a date in college. And she started to think, what's going on that this would be the case, that people really haven't had the opportunity to experience a date? Yeah. And we actually had already moved forward with the project and found her as it was going.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So Catherine Fowler Sample's sister, Mary Colleen, was doing research for the project. And she said, oh, my gosh, there's this professor in Boston. She was in the paper. And she's doing this dating assignment. So we watched all of her YouTube videos, and we thought, oh, she
segued perfectly into your project.
Oh, amazingly well. And then I'll have to say, John Civity is the director of the dating project, and he just does such a wonderful job with the people that we, you know, with individual subjects, mm-hmm. Chris and all the others.
Yeah.
So he really was able to have a conversation with them. Then that's more what we wanted it to be, a conversation.
Well, and it is interesting that she pinpointed something, and you did too, at the same time, that this is an aspect of our culture that is deteriorating, and as a result of that, there's a fallout from successful marriages. And by the way, we are talking with Megan Harrington and Chris Meehan, both with the Dating Project movie. If you have some questions or comments, or you'd like to meet either one of them, actually, because they're both nice Catholic singles,
thanks, Peggy.
Give us a call at 714-282-60. They're not desperate, though. Believe me, these are beautiful people.
Thanks for clarifying that.
Well, if they come on and watch us on Facebook, they'll see that. But the number again is 714-282-6034. That's 714-282-6034. We'd love your comments. We'd love your commentary or your questions about this subject of dating as a Catholic single. So now I'm going to throw it back to you, Chris. How did you like it when somebody actually started studying your mating habits? I mean, you know, isn't that, did you get a little self-conscious, like suddenly, oh, I feel affected?
Well, we got a lot of grants, actually. It was like some museums and natural history. They're like, wow, who is this man? Yeah, you know, I tell you, John, first off, I do have a girlfriend. Sorry, ladies.
Oh.
Yeah, so I don't want to, because I'll really get it when I return.
Oh, I guess
so. Today. Okay. Yeah, yeah, and she's lovely, and she's mm-hmm. a convert. And an amazing person.
Well, was that an important aspect of girls you were dating or girls that you looked at as prospective serious girlfriends?
You know what? I kept fooling myself that it wasn't. And if they were spiritual or, you know what? If they just respected me and let me grow, I could deal with that. But a lot of people there's a tremendous anti Catholicism out there, or just, you know what, it's not even I think people are just ignorant.
Yeah.
You know, they think we, but in any case, I forgot the question because I was rambling on.
Well, I said, was it awkward being studied? Like all of a sudden, is this something, is this natural or now should I affect this kind of a conversation?
John Sippity is a young guy. He's married. He is well beyond his years. He's a very wise guy and he really got things out of me. I'll tell you, it became a movie less about dating and it became like a spiritual thing for me. I realized that this is like, it was just a spiritual quest. We started getting into what really matters, you know, and doubt and faith. And so at first it was kind of fun talking generally about dating and having a good time, but it really became my relationship with God. Do I even know God? Do I, you know, I have this culture, a Catholic culture and a faith, and I thought I did, but it really got to a point, and I don't even know if it's in the film, but it was like, what is my relationship with God? What do I want? You know, if, is my girlfriend, is my spouse, there's a bigger picture than just us, you know, it's humanity. Where do we go? What's happening? And so for me, it became about that. And, a lot happened during the filming of this.
So it triggered some things, maybe.
Big time.
Yeah. You know, as you say that, I want to give a shout out to my son, Nick, who is this day in the charity of your prayers, listeners, please remember him and his fiance, Natalie, who on this very day are in their pre-Cana engagement retreat up in San Francisco at Old St. Mary's Parish there in Chinatown. Yeah.
That's where my parents met.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, God. No, you've just given me a sign.
Old St. Mary's in San Francisco was the place. It's like St. Monica's
In Santa Monica.
In Santa Monica, everybody met there. I mean, so my godfather, my dentist, doctors, probation officers, they all went there. Honestly, it was everybody went through Old St. Mary's.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, you know, you were saying that your relationship with God is so imperative in having a good, healthy relationship with your girlfriend or with anybody, really. But that's what I really hope is rich for them today, is that they kind of can embrace that and that it's laid out for them well. Because I don't, not everybody that does a retreat in the Catholic Church for engaged couples is really good at it, you know, and some people can kind of turn you off. So I'm hoping that it's going to be a good experience. And you just told me something that's very affirming, which is that it's the parish of romance.
It is. It is. But also, you know, it's a journey. It's always a journey. I don't know. The more I talk, I'm helping out with a men's retreat and a gentleman staying at my house. His wife just passed away, married 35 years. And he was just talking about love being a choice. Always making that decision. He loved his wife deeply. He misses her. But he was just saying, you know, love is a choice. And every day you make that choice. And it's the same thing I discovered with faith. There's not this Paul moment where you get knocked off your horse for most of us. It's a constant reaffirming and kind of sharpening and calibrating, you know, our existence. And, you know, if we're blessed and lucky enough to have a companion along that way, because there is doubt, there's all that thing. You need someone to kind of help you with the yoke.
Yeah. And it's just kind of fits together. Megan, why do you think that the practice, the social protocol of dating started to fade? What is it that made it become such an oddity?
Well, I think the best way to explain it would I'd have to borrow Professor Cronin's thoughts on this. So she said, you know, in the 50s, we threw things, a lot of things out, which were not necessarily the best. But she said some things we should have kept.
Yeah.
And that script on how we're supposed to relate to one another and treat one another. She actually associated that with manners because she said, you know, you have manners. They tell you how to act and behave. That forms how you're supposed to interact with people. And they're really... We don't have that as much anymore. And I think a lot of popular culture in certain ways has also depicted this idea of romance and love as being very sexual.
Yeah.
Hypersexualized.
Superficial.
And superficial.
And it was interesting because in the documentary, Professor Cronin points out that in this weird upside down culture, it's easier to go out and have a physical relationship with someone than it is the intimacy of actually having coffee with them makes you very much more vulnerable in today's culture, which is really upside down.
It is. And the other thing, it takes much more courage to put yourself in front of someone for 60, 90 minutes to have a conversation. The rate in college of drinking also affects that inability and decision making.
And that's one of her rules. On this date, you cannot have no alcohol. Mm-hmm. And no alcohol can be involved. And that makes the rapport more grounded, I think.
And just to hear the kids to say how they felt after. You know, she doesn't say, don't hook up. don't do this.
No.
She says, why don't you try
Give
going
it a
on
try.
A date and
yeah.
just tell me how you feel?
Yeah.
And
okay.
it's wonderful.
We're going to return to more of this really riveting conversation about dating in America, and specifically about the documentary coming out next month called The Dating Project that offers us a window into that practice of, or lack thereof, in our culture today. I am with Megan Harrington and Chris Meehan. They are behind the great Dating Project movie that's coming out next month. I am Peggy Normandin, and you're listening to Call Me Catholic on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Stay with us.
Helping you navigate the daily struggles and blessings of life. This is Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin.
Howdy, folks, and happy Valentine's Day, Ash Wednesday, and World Marriage Day. I am your host, Peggy Normandin, and we're feeling the love here on Call Me Catholic today. We're not playing the dating game, per se. I don't see Jim Lang anywhere.
We're light and lively.
We're light and lively. But we are talking about The Dating Project, a new documentary film coming out in April that stalks five single people as they try to navigate around modern culture's rules of engagement and find meaningful relationships by dating again, doing it proper. Megan Harrington is the producer of The Dating Project movie, and Chris Meehan is one of the single men featured in the documentary, and they're both with us. Apparently, Chris is off the market now, though. He told us he is no longer completely single. He's got
yes.
a girlfriend.
Well, I really thought this movie would, you know what I mean, have him coming in. But
yeah,
maybe it's a little blessing here. I got, you know.
Set up your desk and just have them file in.
That would be the worst thing. I would just be over. It wouldn't just be, I don't know, too many? Maybe I'm getting ahead of myself here. But.
Okay, so Chris, in this documentary, there were like five people featured. Three of them were women,
yeah.
and two of them were guys. And it really is a man's world with dating still. I mean, you never talked about, oh, you know, there's nobody to date. The girls were sort of saying, there's really nobody's asked me out on a date.
Yeah.
And the guys were saying, I don't know. I'm just not feeling it. You know? So,
yeah.
So really, where is the obstacle there for a guy that wants to go out on a date?
Well, first of all, stalking me during the movie, it was tough in San Francisco because parking's limited. So they would just be going around and around the block. And so it's just wherever you found parking is where you stalk. So listen, I'm going to say, I think men are getting away with a lot of stuff.
Okay.
And women keep saying, well, where are the guys? Where are the guys? And, you know, it's okay to kind of help us along. If you figure there's so many households without men, there's no mentors. Boys spend time with boys. You don't spend time with your dad working on the Ford under the hood on Saturday. It's kind of diminished. So, you know, I think we got to relearn that. And my friend, Doug Dye, who's engaged to our friend Maggie, said something very interesting. He got it from a book I think Maggie gave to him, but he says, men need an adventure, a beauty to protect, and a cause to fight for.
Oh. Hmm.
And, you know, it's okay to help. Hmm. Yes. And men want that. They really want that. And it's okay, you know, but I think men are, you know, my father died when I was a kid.
And you're the youngest of how many?
I'm the youngest of eight.
Okay.
Yeah. Wasn't an accident. It was more of a Catholic rhythm method fender bender. But, or the blessing. You know how that is.
You know, you're a blessing to us, Chris.
A blessing, yeah. One more. but the, with, you know, I'll tell you, with my girlfriend, she's a doctor. Yeah, so she has a high status job, but she's always just make a decision, dude. Just like, we're going here, it's okay. And I always thought, trying to be the nice guy, which I am, mm-hmm. but she's like, it's okay, I'm in charge all day at work.
Oh.
It's okay for you just to take the reins here and to kind of learn that. But you know, when my father passed away, I did find mentors, but they were in archetypes. You know, he died in 1978, and that's when Pope John Paul became a pope, I think. And so there was these figures, the archetype of John Wayne, you know, just the archetype. I'm talking about the public figure, not mm-hmm. the private. And it was, as I got older, I said, oh, I'm going to emulate that. And I thought that was an interesting thing I found out about myself. But being the baby and all that stuff, I had to kind of relearn to be a man.
Well, it's very cute. Megan, you featured his mother. Chris's mm-hmm. mother steals the show, by the way,
yeah,
in this documentary.
Yes, she does.
And it's you have this adorable rapport with her. And I sort of wondered, why did you include his mother in this profile of dating, how singles are going about dating?
Well, we were going to go to San Francisco, his hometown. We wanted to be with him where he grew up.
Mm-hmm.
And I also come from a big family, so I kind of understand all that craziness and fun. And I thought that Catherine also does, the other producer, come from a big family. So just kind of to be present with his mom, who was on a retreat that day. She had just come back from a retreat, so she was tired. But we said, do you think we could interview her mom? And Chris was gracious enough to let us do that because she's 91. Mm-hmm. You would never guess it looking at her. I mean, she is... She's got more energy than you would imagine.
She has a sort of Mother Angelica no-nonsense about her, which is just stop worrying about it and do it, son.
Yes.
And yet you sort of start by saying, I can't replace you. I mean, I'm looking for somebody to replace you, Mom.
Yeah. Is that horrible?
Somebody who can do my laundry.
Well, I will say, so the sound guy that was that day with us in, from San Francisco, we got downstairs and we're kind of unpacking and... He said, well, no wonder he can't find anybody because they don't make him like her anymore.
Oh, yeah.
So the impact she also had on somebody who is just there to do his job, she really affected not only people who watch this film, but the crew as well. And certainly Chris as her son.
Yeah, she is. She is just absolutely has a precious role in this documentary. But, you know, you, when you mentioned the big families, another interesting thing, psychological thing to observe, especially as Chris is the youngest, is how did the older siblings date and how did they do it? Now, in my case, I'm the youngest of four, but there's a 10-year difference between my oldest sister and myself. And it was almost a different generation because she dated extremely traditionally. And I always loved it. She got married out of college. She had a beautiful husband. They have married, you know, 51 years. And it didn't happen for me that way. I think my generation started introducing the sort of sloppy dating. And I always longed for that kind of protocol, for that kind of formality. It was interesting, but I couldn't achieve it. I mean, I did. My husband is beautiful. I mean, my husband was, he was a hero. He came out of the cortege of dreary bachelors and treated me like a princess. And I loved that. But I have to say that was when dating started to become eroded, I think. And how was it with your brother? Did you have older brothers that you looked at and sort of said, I want to date like he's dating?
Yeah. I've always, I'd never split a check, even if I'm broke. I mean, there's things to do. Yeah. You never do it. I mean, the people are splitting checks. Whatever that is, you just don't do it. You know, I went out with somebody who she kept saying, she was going to make me dinner. And you know, the only thing she made was reservations. So, $1,200 later, we realized that wasn't going to work. That's actually somewhat true, actually. But the traditional, listen to, if the guys out there do it, hold the door open, all that stuff. Do not listen to this common thing here. You know, if she wants to hold the door open for herself, fine. That's okay. But just you be that guy. Be the guy. Pick up the check. Hold the door open. You know, you may not like it, but it works, and it's not saying anything. We're equal, but it just goes a long way, and I tell you, women are dying for it.
Well, and I think occasionally it's okay when you're dating for the girl to say, you know, this is going to be my treat tonight. I've planned a really fun
date. Yes.
Don't you think?
Absolutely. And first date, no.
No. Yeah, not necessarily. But on this dating project at Boston College, the girls did have to initiate. I mean, all of her students had to initiate a date. So this is very modern that a girl would take a guy out on a date for the first time or ask him out the first time.
Yes, and I think what she's doing there is offering both the opportunity to experience something new because we have fallen so far. Maybe the girl, so if you're for, I want the guy to ask me out, well, consider it flirting and ask him on a date.
Oh, cute. Okay.
And then let him take it from there. If you're, because for me too, it's uncomfortable for me to think about, I did have to do the dating assignment. We will not talk about that on this show.
Oh, you did have to do that?
Yes. I did, but yeah. I would say it was very uncomfortable. So
She went to Costco. Ooh, she has a Costco, a huge pepper spray.
You know, that always puts a date off a little bit when you come with the pepper spray.
I know, but I'm so used to it now, it doesn't even affect me.
Well, we are talking with Megan Harrington. Big segue there. We are talking with Megan, apparently, who owns Pepper Spray. Megan Harrington, producer of the Dating Project movie, a great documentary that follows five single people around and observes their dating habits in this modern culture. And one of the people she observes is Chris Meehan, who's our very entertaining bachelor here today. What do you guys think about online dating?
Ooh, silence.
No. That doesn't work on radio, kids.
I that's right. Well, I will say that I will borrow from someone that had been studying this a lot and said, it's just another way to meet people, but you need to have a plan. Mm-hmm. So I've experienced this where we'll be talking with someone. And he said, I've met someone online and we've been emailing for a long time. So have a plan with online dating that you meet in person and get to know them. So I think it is now a way to meet someone. Neil Clark Warren is in the documentary, and he also is talking about online dating, that in this world, it is a way to meet people and to, but just to have a plan with it.
Yeah, right. Keep it real. Keep it real. We had, I think it was just last year on our Valentine's Day show, we had the founders of CatholicSingles.com on. And they kind of did a little setup for us, but and that's becoming more common. But I also think that I'd love to sort of measure how successful relationships are that meet online versus the ones that you meet in person with. So, Megan, give us a scenario of your great first date.
For me?
Yeah.
So a great first date. Well, I'll have to be 60 or 90 minutes or less. So we'll go.
So you don't want a long, you don't want a long commitment.
No, I was trying to learn from Carrie Cronin.
That's one of her rules.
That first date, 60, 90 minutes. I love to dance. I think that, I think that would be a, fun. Now someone might go, well, that's a weird first date. So, but I do think that could be something fun, like active, or.
But you're a break dancer.
Pop and lock. A little pop and lock.
Bring your own linoleum, gentlemen. And parachute pants.
And I take it back. That's probably not a great first date. Okay. I'm jumping to date two.
It's a great first date. Dancing is a great salsa. I got to tell you. And she's a very good dancer.
Well, I think about college kids. And I think, how can you get dating back in college? That's very awkward. They don't have much money. So I've got a great suggestion for a great first date in college.
Yeah.
You say to a girl that you're in class with or something, you say, hey, do you like Scrabble? I love to play Scrabble. I'm looking for some new people to play Scrabble with. Would you like to come over and we can meet, you know, in my room, or we can go down to the cafeteria or whatever. And I'd love to play Scrabble. And I, you know what I love about something like that is that I'm a really good speller. So I always
letter score.
but it gives you something to do. It gives you a vehicle on which to kind of form conversation. So you're not just sitting there staring at each other, sort of saying, "Well, how do you feel about this? And do you want children? Or you know, how did you grow up? And what's your favorite subject?"
Right.
You're doing things, and so there's a natural outcropping of conversation that comes with it. And dancing would be one of them.
Yeah, breakfast is good.
Okay.
But coffee, you get that coffee rush. I had a friend, Jeff Carlin, who visited me in New York, and he was dating his wife, his future wife, Lisa. And they came to New York, and they went down to they wanted a New York feel, so they went down to a soup kitchen down in the Bowery.
Great.
And so he already knew her, but you see someone in that thing, and it's empathetic, and you really get to see people can be really attractive in those settings where you're like, you see the kindness, you know, and that is something to do. I was talking to Father Kidney at Corpus Christi, and he's just like, you know, people are jumping in bed right away with, that's the most intimate thing. Get to know them. Go on hikes. Yeah. Go work at an orphanage. Get to know. Because that's real love. And you see someone in that. I find that very attractive.
I think that's really neat. And I think it removes a certain veneer of self-consciousness that that is sometimes awkward where you're just sitting having a conversation. But here's another thing about dating that I like, traditional dating, is that you are responsible for that person. Once that, you know, I remember getting picked up for a date. And maybe I didn't like the person so much right at first, or maybe I did, but I knew I was going to be with that person for the evening. He couldn't ditch me. He had to he had to return me home. And today I look at my kids like when they were in high school, and they didn't date. They went in these huge groups and to the dances and to the proms and homecoming. And they could easily just like ditch that person and not ever have to encounter them again. And I think there's a certain maturity and civility in being responsible and keeping company with someone that you have committed to spend the evening with, or or the morning with, if Chris asks you to breakfast. And I really like that. Hey, Chris, we have a caller with us today from Dale, Colorado. I've never heard of Dale, Colorado. Kathleen, and she claims to know you.
Oh, boy.
So welcome to Call Me Catholic, Kathleen. That's a lot of C's.
Hey, hello. Yes. Oh, Chris, I want to start from a million places. I'm in Vail, Colorado with a V.
Oh, Vail. Thank you, Marvelous Matt. Someone who's not a good speller on this show.
Dale. Dale's some guy in the parking lot at Walmart. Dale's calling from his trailer.
All right, Kathleen from Vail, Colorado. Much prettier than Dale. What do you have to say to Chris?
Well, first of all, I'm so excited to see the movie. This is going to be great, especially because I feel like a Catholic nag. I have been telling my girlfriend for years to be dating. You know, you have to be dated. I met my husband 25 years ago because I finally gave up on, not to say that I was, it's horrible, but, you know, hanging out at bars and meeting guys was not a very good way to go on the
show. It's a little unsavory.
After that. right? It wasn't the best. So when I started dating my husband, before I met my husband many years ago, I started making this rule. I wouldn't drink, and I would just, if a boy, if my mom and dad said, hey, Uncle Spencer has a nephew that you need to meet, I'd be fine. I'd go. And we would have, you know, and within like 2 seconds, I would know this is not the guy.
Yeah.
So, Chris, one thing I would do is I would offer, you know, I'd really like to split the bill. And that way I didn't feel like I owed the guy anything.
Oh.
And it was okay that I'd never see him again. Well, funny thing, when men start dating, they bring perfume over. Some brought flowers. I mean, it was amazing. This is,
wow.
It was crazy. And then I met my husband. And then I met my husband. And so, you know, and he took me on dates. So I think that's a really, it's so exciting. So I Dolores is my good friend. I went to Paris with your sister when she opened up the Walk for Life in Paris.
Oh, yeah. This is Chris's sister.
This is Chris's sister. We're not into genders here. Oh, wait, Chris's sister. Oh, wait, I got it backwards. Okay.
Wait, so Kathleen, you know Chris's sister. Is that right?
Everyone knows Dolores.
Okay.
Yes.
That's great.
But I'm the one that you know, it's just fun being Catholic because there's all different stages. First, you can't find the right husband. Then you can't get pregnant. Well, I couldn't get pregnant. And Mary, and so Dolores said, I can't go and give this speech in Paris. Nobody can get off of work for 4 days. And I said, I don't have any children. My husband's a great guy. I'll go with you.
Oh, okay. Dolores is game.
Oh,
well, Kathleen, we love your story. Now, Matt has corrected on the screen, veil. He's got a little asterisk next to it, so it might have a little
you know, and Kathleen, you're right. I mean, at least make the wallet grab. I think splitting the check is perfectly fine. I don't want to sound like an expert here, you know, but it's...
But you wouldn't like that. If you took a girl out on a date, and this is fair to be honest, and she said, oh, here, let's split it. If I were a guy, I would immediately get the impression that Kathleen is implying that I want to pay for half of this because I don't want to be responsible to you anymore. You know?
I went on a date with an Armenian woman, and my bank had been hacked. So when I went to pay the bill, it was declined. And so then I gave a credit card. It was declined. I'm like, no, I just put $3,000 in there. And then she were just sitting there. And I have no money. So I start to hint like, hey, do you have any? How's your cash flow? And she's just blank. So I say, I'll be right back. So I go to CVS. And I'm like, I'll just try. They have a Citibank there. So I'm feeding it and just decline. I call a friend of mine who's sleeping in his car. And I say, hey Glenn, can I borrow $200? And he just, you know, and so we came and we were in there. He forgot his passcode. It's been 40 minutes. She's at the restaurant. Well, I returned with Kat. It was so embarrassing.
Was she still there?
She was still there. Yeah, we went on a second date.
Wow. Okay. Well, this is a gentleman. He will not let me pay for it. And I'm going to, even if he has to leave me alone and go find homeless people to borrow money.
You know, I'll say this homeless, well, he was at the time. He said, I said, Glenn, that was so kind. He says, Chris, I just wanted to do something kind for somebody. You've been so good to me. And he was crying. He says, I just wanted to do, it was just so sweet. It's a lesson in people, allowing people to give. So.
Yes, absolutely. Well, Kathleen, thanks for calling in. And now get back on the slopes there in Vail.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Say hi to Dale.
Smart Alec. Hey, so what do you guys think about double dating? Is that still a term that people use, double dating? Because I think that's kind of a safe way to go out on a first date is to sort of say, I'm not going to take you, you know, you don't have anything to be concerned about because I've got my friend with me and he's got his girlfriend. Or what do you think about, Chris is looking at, like, explain to me what double dating is.
No, it's funny because I'm honest to God, I'm just remembering this. That's how I met Megan. We went to some Catholic function and someone faked on me, a friend's sister. And so she's like, I'm not going. Here's Megan. And we went with a guy that had just joined the seminary with Manny, right? And so we're on like a double date.
That's an interesting date.
It was. It was funny. I know. He's just about to become a priest, too.
First and last.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I hope you didn't put him into a vocational crisis, Megan.
No, I had nothing to do with it.
Hey, Megan, so how much influence does your faith have in the impression that you make on men that are prospective, you know, dates or boyfriends? Or do they notice right away that you're a Catholic girl? Does that come into play at all?
I actually don't know, because I've never either asked that or it's come across. I hope that my faith does.
Yeah.
I hope that is something that they see, or because it's very important to me. But in the discussions, and I think what Carrie Cronin talks about is sometimes we talk about way advanced things on the first date.
Right.
When really, I just get to know somebody. We had a conversation with two girls when we were in pre-interviews and kind of just talking about the scene. This was way early on when I really didn't realize what was going on. And these two college girls said, you know, we just tell the guy right away, I'm not going to sleep with you.
Yeah.
And Catherine and I were like, why are you telling him that? Why don't you ask where he's from? Or like, how many kids are in his family?
And you know, you don't want to beg the question, I wasn't going to ask you.
Yeah, but then as we progressed, now 4 years later, I know why.
Yeah.
I know why they're saying it.
Okay.
Because it is an issue.
It's a rule of engagement that you want to say, that one's off the table.
Yeah, and I wish we could just go back and say, hey, where are you from? Let me get to know you as a person. Yeah. Let me see if I like you. Let me see if we have things in common. And kind of take it back a little bit.
You know, it used to be that if you were identified as a Catholic girl, and this is maybe going back to the 50s, 60s, I think Billy Joel wrote a song about it. Catholic girls, you didn't have to say anymore. If you were a Catholic girl, you know, you came with certain boundaries. Mm-hmm. And I don't know whether that's so much implicit anymore.
Mm. Yeah, I think there is a lot of confusion in this one particular area that we can live our faith in so many ways beautifully. Feeding the poor, helping the homeless, doing so many things at church. But in this area of relationships, it needs so much attention from the church. It needs so much attention from parents to their children, from peer-to-peer accountability, to help us go, no, wait, we're Christian. Like, we have a different light. We have a different standard. And it's hard because everything coming at us is saying the opposite of how we should act.
Well, one of the girls in your documentary, a darling girl from
New York,
a Rashida. Mm-hmm. And her church, it was very clear that her church was very important to her socially. Mm-hmm. And it was very important to her that she date a man who had the same values and mm-hmm. same sort of Christian mm-hmm. foundation that she did. She said in the film, I shouldn't give all this away, but she said at the very end, she said, I have a crush on somebody. Did she end up dating that guy?
She did. I don't know if it was the same guy.
Okay.
But she did end up dating and having a boyfriend.
And one of the other girls, Cecilia, was a girl who had lived here. She had come from Mexico, and she was so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And she was saying how she hadn't been on a date in so long. And in the documentary ends, and she moves back to Monterey,
that's
Mexico.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes culturally that is going to be a more comfortable zone for her because she was in America where people didn't have the same.
And I think with the Cecilia, when she went back home, she was also at a point where she needed to find a job. She was trying to figure out her next steps. She was in a city that she'd been in for 4 years. She had made friends, but maybe they weren't the kind of friends that, or some of them weren't the kind of friends that maybe shared the same values. So she was also at this point of decision-making of, I'm going to get my master's and where am I going to go do that?
Yeah.
So we had no idea that she was not going to be in Chicago when we came back.
That's interesting.
Mm. Okay. Mexico's beautiful.
So you two experienced single people. What advice would you give out there? I'm going to ask you to each do it gender-specific. So, Megan, what would you tell a girl, a young woman in her 20s, 30s, who is not having a successful dating social life, would love to date? What should she do?
I would go to the Dating Project movie on April 17th, theaters nationwide. No,
Producer first.
Yeah.
Well, I would say to maybe let people know that you are interested in dating. I think a perception sometimes is you don't want to. I mean, I had somebody say that to me, and I was like, wait, what am I doing that makes someone think I don't want a husband or want to go on a date?
Oh, interesting.
So make sure you're letting people know that is of interest. Putting yourself in different situations, going to different churches if it's church, going out with different groups. And I think Kathleen, the caller from Dale, Colorado, said it best.
Matt, you're never going to live that Dale, Colorado.
Just kidding, Matt. You're doing a great job.
There's an obvious answer. Ask Alexa.
Alexa, find me a date.
Just kidding.
Yeah, exactly. I would just say put yourself out there.
Okay. Good advice. All right. So, Chris, what would you tell a guy? And I know several guys in their 20s that would say, I can't, you know, I'd love to date, but I can't find anybody.
Yeah. Well, you know, a friend of mine told me, actually, it was our friend Maggie. She says, you know, we're not looking for a great man. We're looking for a good man. And there's a difference. So your success level, if you're just be a good guy, and also, you know, close the laptop, turn off the phone. You know, you got to just put that you got to get out there. You got to get out there, engage, and just put that stuff away.
How good are our Catholic churches, our Catholic parishes, at embracing and giving Catholic singles a place to sort of thrive and exist and meet each other?
You know, our parish is pretty.
Is that St. Monica's?
St. Monica's.
Oh yeah, that's a rock star parish.
Well, I have a, you know, come for the women, stay for Jesus. Anyway, whatever gets you in the door, seriously, I mean, come on. You're sitting there like, wow, who's that? And then, bam, you know, you're in confession and you're doing all the sacraments.
What mass in particular, Chris, of these?
You know what?
These single people.
Early, now that I have a girlfriend, I go to the early morning mass just to.
He's throwing out a lot of disclaimers there. Yeah, now that I have a girlfriend.
I also think there can be a lot of social events for singles. Yeah. But I think what we're starving for is truth and beauty. The goodness. We need people, we need ways to know how we're supposed to be in relationship. Not so much meetups or, you know, events at night. We need to know how are we supposed to treat each other? Because it's hard in this world to navigate that. Mm-hmm. I think the more foundational that we can engage with people and talk about really tough issues that are affecting relationships, really, really tough ones, help people through it. I think that's just as important as a get together on a Friday after church. It's, mm-hmm. let's get individual sessions. Let's get churches together to start saying, okay, everybody, you're in it. It's mm-hmm. a tough world. Here's the truth of Jesus. Here's the truth of how we're supposed to live our lives. Because I think we lack that. Yeah. We just don't even know how to do it because it's so difficult.
Well, this has been one of the most fun conversations we've ever had on the air, don't you think, Jimmy G?
Oh, I agree completely.
Do you say that to every guest,
no,
Peggy?
No, we do not. We hit a home run.
Guest. Yeah.
But this is a gateway movie. I mean, this is really okay. going to start
so
momentum.
It's The Dating Project. It's coming out April 17th. The website is The Dating Project.
Movie.com.
TheDatingProjectMovie.com. So check it out, kids. Find yourself a nice date to enjoy it with, okay? And mostly, stay with us. I also want to mention to you that the Catholic News Agency is a great resource that EWTN offers you. Go to CatholicNewsAgency.com and find out all the current events that'll give you good material to talk about on your date. But stay tuned for next week's show, same day, same time, for more good news from our good faith. Until then, I am Peggy Normandin, but you can call me Catholic. Thanks, guys.
You've been listening to Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin, live from the Christ Cathedral campus in Garden Grove, California. Call Me Catholic is a co-production of EWTN Radio and Orange County Catholic Radio. Heard weekly on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.